sky's so blue. The birds are singing, I got nothing to do. Hey, hey,
hey, hey.
It's a sunny day.
Sunny day now.
My pocket's empty, my cupboard's bare. But call me illogical, I just don't care. Hey, hey,
hey, hey, hey.
It's just a sunny day.
Hey, 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 it's a sunny day.
It's just a sunny day.
It's the KSL Greenhouse. Expert tips for flowers, trees, gardens, and soil. Our hosts are Maria Chaleos and Tawn Bettis on KSL News Radio.
Good morning, and thank you for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse. We'll be taking your calls and your text questions in just a moment. You can call us at 801-575-8255 or text us at 57500. Good morning, Tawn.
Good morning.
Sun's out, and it's going to be stormy most of the weekend.
Yeah, the weather forecast has changed about every 6 hours the last couple of days, and it went from 80% chance of rain today and tomorrow to clear to now 40 or 50, 60% chance every day for the next 4 or 5 days.
Kind of puts a little bit of a stall to any gardening plants.
It does. It's cooling down a little bit up into the upper 40s to lower 50s, which we need. I was out yesterday, the day before, and areas have apricots blooming already, pluots blooming, forsythias out, and it's a week to 10 days ahead of where we should be, and it just, what it does is increases our chances of frost through April, and so we do need to slow down a little bit on the weather, so hopefully this will get us back to not normal, but just kind of putting the reins on things a little bit.
Slow down, weather.
Slow down.
Yeah, well, it's also prime allergy season. I'm already sniffling and sneezing,
yeah, itchy
and my eyes are burning.
Ooh. Yeah, it's on.
Okay, I'm not going to complain about that because it's worth all of the beautiful blooms that we get as a result.
It is.
This morning, the plant of the week is the rock cress, which is just a really beautiful, low spring blooming perennial. And it comes in a couple of different colors, the white and the purple. And why do you like the rock cress?
Well, they're pretty spring blooming plants. And they're, again, you know, when you plant only spring blooming perennials, your yard's beautiful for 6 weeks and then you have nothing.
Mm-hmm.
But they are worth mixing in because they're adapted to alkaline soil, which we have, and they're native to Europe in the Mediterranean area, but at higher elevations. And so they are ones that are just adapted to our relatively dry climate, although they will need supplemental irrigation.
They do not like the heat, though.
They don't.
So where is the best place to plant these, you know, to really enjoy them all season?
Yeah, if you read the plant catalogs, they usually say full sun. And if you live in areas where it doesn't get above, you know, 90, 93, 94, that probably works. And so they're hardy enough, at least some of the varieties, that they would survive Bear Lake.
Mm-hmm.
And in those areas, I would plant them in full sun. But on the Wasatch Front, because our temperatures have been increasing during the summer, well, in the winter too, but I would actually put them maybe on the east side of my house. But definitely not where they're getting a lot of reflected heat.
Right. They seem to do better with a little bit of partial shade.
6 hours of sun a day is sufficient for
right.
them.
Right. Right. And then these, you have to be careful where you plant them too, because they'll kind of thin out during the summer and look kind of scraggly. Where if they're in a cooler area, they stay in their nice green mound.
They do. And there's a trick to preventing them from doing that. If you, as soon as they're done blooming, especially if they're newer plants, you tip prune them just 3 or 4 inches, and it causes a lot of side growth and limits their scraggliness.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you tip prune them after they're done blooming, that will help.
So how much do you do?
3 or 4 inches off the tips of the, where the, we'd call it the terminal bud or apical bud, but you follow the little branches out or the runners, and at the tips of those, just cut 3 or 4 inches off. Or if they're getting too big, cut a little more off and let them send out a lot of side branches, so to speak, from those points.
Okay, well, that's the first time I've heard that. So I'm glad that I asked this question about how
yes.
they get scraggly.
And so there is a second variety of rock cress, and one of the names is false rock cress.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not a pretender, and it's also really pretty. I mean, we're more familiar with the purple rock cresses, but there are varieties of rock cress that are white and pink and coming into red. If you look up them online, you can tell that somebody's used Photoshop maybe to enhance the red color.
That's not helpful. Let me put it that way. There is a second variety.
And so the one that we usually see, if you look at the Latin name, is Arabis. Mm-hmm. And the other one is Abricia. Sometimes people call it Abrietta. But they look very similar. It's just that depending on which ones, you can find white, you can find pink, you can find almost red. Then you can go into the purples and almost blues to where you're getting into violet colors. And so people will use these interchangeably with the creeping phlox, to where the creeping phlox has a lot, some similar colors in the pinks and whites and purples, but they are a little bit taller. And it's not that I prefer them, but they give you a different texture in your spring garden.
Which, but the rock cress, you mean?
Yes, the rock cress.
Yeah. I kind of like how they have kind of a soft kind of leaf to them.
They do. And the leaves are evergreen. And as you mentioned, during hot summers, if they're in full blast sun on south exposures, they can look a little bit tired and ratty by July and August. But if you plant them in that afternoon shade to where they're still getting 6 hours, and but out of the hottest part of the day, they actually, I think they look better over time than the creeping phlox do, because those can also get a little bit tired and kind of beat up looking by the end of the season.
Yeah, these two perennials are so beautiful in the spring. And when you go into your garden center, be aware of the fact that you need to mix them in with other perennials, because the first year, like you said, that we planted things in our yard, I went in the spring and I bought lots of phlox and lots of rock cress. And then that's all I had for the season, and had to plant tons of annuals to have any color whatsoever.
As my dad would say, you want to prevent your yard from becoming a one-trick pony.
I absolutely did that the first
and
year.
So,
live and learn, right?
Yeah. So both of these are actually in the cabbage family, the brassicas. And we are familiar with the cabbage and the broccoli and the Brussels sprouts and all them. These are close relatives, but a lot of our spring blooming flowers are actually part of that same family. And they're the way they survive, and their, I guess, MO is to come out in the spring, bloom soon, and then go partially dormant later in the season and do it again so that they can get a jump on soil nutrients and sunlight and things before all the trees leaf out. And so they intentionally and genetically bloom early as part of their life strategy.
So are they also edible?
The not the Abricias, but the Arabis forms. So Arabis caucasus?
So there are some.
Yes, Caucasian. They're from the Caucasus Mountains, and so they're called Caucasian rock cress. That particular kind is a salad herb, and they are edible.
Okay. Because, you know, a lot of people now like to really change up their foods and their salads and add in kind of flowers.
Yes. And so
roses that are edible.
I would be careful and make sure that you have Arabis and not Abricia, because Abricia, there's no information on if it's edible or not, but the Arabis is edible and you can use it in salads.
It was my curiosity question.
Yeah.
Not that I think a lot of people would even do that. Anything that affects these insects or diseases?
Not really. There's a few things out there. You might actually get some cabbage looper on them in the spring. Once in a while, they are susceptible to some fungal diseases if they're overhead watered too much and water sits on them. If they're overwatered, they can get some root rots in them. But generally, I think their biggest thing, the biggest thing that gets them is actually the heat during the summer. They are relatively water wise.
Okay.
So especially if you put them in afternoon shade and then get them established after a year or two, they'll survive just fine being watered deeply once a week.
All right, anything else you wanted to add about that?
Oh, they're really pretty, and it's just the time of year to talk about them because they're in bloom, and they should be available now. If not, they'll be available within the next few
weeks
from local retailers. So,
all right. And you can find out more about the rock cress, which is the plant of the week, on the KSL Greenhouse Facebook page. We're going to take a break. Come back with your calls and questions. The number to call, 801-575-8255. Text us, 57500. Good morning. Thank you for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse. Maria and Ton taking your calls, 801-575-8255. You can text us your questions at 57500. Let's see. First text of the morning, Ton, is a white top question. What's the best way to manage white top? Which herbicides work best? Is it blooming this time of year?
It's growing, but not blooming yet, but it's quickly spreading. And this is one that I really need more information. But the best thing that they can spray on it is actually Roundup or a glyphosate product, because Roundup does a really great job of knocking it out at like 100%. If it's in the lawn, then they can use a lawn weed killer containing 2,4-D. 2,4-D is registered to take it out. But if it's in flower beds and things, they need to be careful, and they will have to take precautions to protect their desirable plants if they're leafing out, especially, and they do not use a lawn weed killer in those flower beds. And so they would use a glyphosate product because it's less likely to drift. So, but white top is one that it's been around for a long time, but over the last 10 years, it has spread like wildfire. In areas of the West Desert, in areas where there's new construction, areas that have salty soil or certain heavy metals, it is tolerant of a lot of different soil conditions. And it has a root system that it spreads like wildfire. One new plant can produce dozens of little baby plants in one summer. And they seed out and produce hundreds of seeds per plant. And so they're not a one to be fooled with. If you find a few of them, get rid of them, because within a year to 2 years, they'll be everywhere. Fortunately, there are some herbicides that will take them out, but it's if you travel through Eureka, Southern Utah County, up through Box Elder County, there are many areas that has become really problematic. And just to show how pervasive and bad the weed is, for as much as you, it'll form almost like a 18-inch to 2-foot ground cover above ground. 70% of its biomass is underground.
Wow.
So it's just a really bad weed. So get
rid
of it.
It's so pretty. I've got out in the desert. It's really lovely.
It is, but it's
cauliflower. I mean, I don't know what
it
looks like.
It does. It is one that there was a situation last year to where there's an area that it has a lot of oriental poppies blooming in the spring. And so it's become Instagram famous. And this white top has been moving in, and they've got the oriental poppies and the white top blooming at the same time. Mm-hmm. But the white top was taking over the whole area and slowly eliminating the poppies. And so the thing that it is pretty. Several years ago, I was digging it and getting it out of my yard. My daughter came out and was just in tears because I was ruining her pretty flowers.
Because
she was 6 or 7 years old.
That's why it's important to know what you have in your
yes,
yard, right?
But it is one that we talked about, that strategy of the rock cresses to come out and bloom early. And then they'll go semi-dormant through the summer so that they can beat all the other plants to the soil moisture and the soil resources and grow faster. Well, white top is a very naughty cousin to the rock cresses. It's in the same family. And because it spreads by underground rhizomes so quickly, it is one that we really don't want. But it uses that same strategy of using available soil moisture and soil resources, nutrients, to outcompete the native plants that will come out later. And because it's there, and not only is it shading the ground, but it is depleting the soil of moisture and nutrients, our native plants can't compete with it. And that is why it is such just a bad plant, and that if you get it in your yard or on your property, it should be controlled.
All right. Connie is on the line in Cottonwood Heights. Good morning, Connie. What was your question this morning?
Well, my question is, I'm going to take you back to the creeping phlox again.
Sure.
Because I've had creeping phlox in my front flower bed for about 4 years, and it has looked really nice. But last year, it just started looking scraggly and woody and ugly. And I tried cutting it back, and now it just looks more woody. Do I take part of it out? Do I take it all out, start over? What do I do? And it is north facing.
If this spring it doesn't look any better, I would dig it up and just replant. It does have a usable life. 4 or 5, 6 years down the road, it does get a little bit scraggly and things, and so it never hurts to refresh. And then, you know, you might try some other things. You know, a lot of our spring blooming perennials don't last longer than the 5 or 6 years before they start looking tired and, you know, just getting to a point that they maybe need to be swapped out. But you could maybe try some other spring blooming perennials and mix it up a bit, just, you know, depending on what's available.
Okay. So I'm kind of looking for something that's a little ground covering a little bit without it multiplying and replenishing and taking over the earth all on its own. So would it be the rock cress, or is that going to do the same thing?
They're very similar in use. And
okay,
it's just that the rock cresses have a lot of the same general colors, but different shades, darker purple, you know, pinks and different things. And like we've talked about earlier, when you plant them, when they're done blooming, you give them a light haircut and plant them in areas where they're not going to get a lot of hot sun. So east side of your home, away from reflected heat, and they'll do better. But even rock cress over 5 or 6 years may start to look a little bit tired.
So what if she divided a portion of that and planted a small portion somewhere else? Like,
that's something I would definitely try. So this spring, if you do have healthy portions, you know, then you've got these big clumps. Maybe you dig them up and
after
pull out.
Blooming.
Yeah, after they're done blooming. Well,
yeah.
No? Okay.
That might
work?
Kill them.
That might kill them, right?
It might kill them. So you'd need to actually do this in the fall. And so you dig them up, take the healthy portions, and split them to 3 or 4 inch, maybe 5 inch wide sections. 4 inches is probably sufficient, and put them in new homes and see if they come out in the spring and do their thing for you.
You
if
can
not,
tell I don't like giving up on my plants.
Yeah. So it just depends.
I was going to say, I'm just not in love with them that much. I'm, you know, not that attached to it. If I pull it out, throw it away, I'm okay with that.
All right.
So
opportunity to plant something new.
Okay.
All right.
So try the rock cress, but you said maybe intermingle it with other stuff.
You can. I mean, if you only need low growing things, you're a little bit limited on spring bloomers.
Yeah.
But there are some other spring blooming plants. I mean, like the dronicums, a leopard's bane, has yellow spring daisies that might look really pretty mixed in with the purples and pinks. So that would be one you could look at. In more shady areas, you might even look at Linton Rose. That's an early spring bloomer that's out right now, too. So there are some other things you could mix in.
Okay. What did you call the other one? Dragon's mane?
Leopard's bane.
B-A-N-E. Oh, leopard's bane.
Leopard's bane and Linton Rose or something. It's also called, it's sometimes the Linton Rose is also called hellebore.
All right, Connie.
Okay.
Thank you for your call.
Thank you.
We take a break for the bottom of the hour news. Number to call with your questions, 801-575-8255 or text us 57500.
The Greenhouse Show on KSL News Radio.
Good morning. Thank you for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse. Maria Chaleos, Ton Bettis with you this morning, taking your calls at 801-575-8255. Phone lines are open, and you can text us your questions at 57500. I don't think a lot of people are very excited about getting out in their yards today, Ton. It looks a bit gloomy out there. Some rain is impending, and that wind, oh my goodness.
It is also just, I want to be in bed. You know,
that time change really did you in, right?
It did. I know you mentioned that it's just been tough to readjust. It's only an hour, but I don't know. It's just a busy time of year, too. But the weather is kind of putting a damper on things. And I was planning on working my yard. I'm hoping I have the opportunity to. But
I was planning on planting trees. I'm not sure I want to dig some holes with rain coming.
Unsettled weather, it makes it a little interesting to try to get things done.
Certainly does. Our next listener would like to know. They say they bought what they assume is a hardy hibiscus. The tag says it's a rose mallow hibiscus hybrid. They want to know, how do they prune it and when?
You would just cut it back now because it's a perennial that dies back in the fall. Cut it within a couple inches of the ground, and you might even think it's dead, but it will, in sometime between late April and mid-May, wake up, and when it does, it grows 2 or 3 inches a day. And so they are very fast growers when they do wake up, and then they'll generally start blooming anywhere from early to late July, depending on the temperatures. But if it's a hybrid rose mallow, that's rose mallow is just another name for hardy hibiscus.
Okay. Next listener would like to know, when do they seed the sweet meat squash?
You would seed that just 2 or 3 weeks before you would plant it outside, and you want to put it in containers that are deep, because the squash are deeply rooted, and they're actually, that whole family is native to areas that are at least a little bit arid, and so they like to reach into the soil. So don't put them in standard trays, but put them in something that's at least 3 to 4 inches tall. You know, even sometimes the red, not Dixie cups, the red plastic drinking cups, mm-hmm. or you can use a number of things, but they are deeply rooted. I like to find, if I can, biodegradable containers that are deeper and then seed those out a couple of weeks, you know, 2 to 3 weeks ahead of time. And I'll just put the whole container in my garden, slit the sides so it can root through the sides, and they seem to be happy.
Yeah. You don't want to start now, though, because it'll get too big and scraggly.
You'll have a
2 or 3 foot
plant that you won't be able to transplant.
Okay. 2 to 3 weeks before you want to put.
Yeah. Squash are very short term because they're hard to transplant, or harder than other plants. And so when you do that, you need to have a deeper container. If you're pulling them out of the cells, you need to treat them very gently so you don't mess up the roots.
Next person would like to know, how early can they plant the Blue Lake 270? This is very specific. Blue Lake 274 bush green beans. Start with that one.
Not until danger of frost is gone. Sometime early to mid-May is just fine.
We're just excited. That's all.
Yeah, if they want legumes, plant peas. It's fine to plant them now.
And how early do they plant the early bird zinnias?
It depends.
Assuming they want to put seeds outside, maybe that's not a great assumption.
Sometime late April, and then just let them germinate. But if they're doing them inside, I would get them started within the next week or two.
Next person would like to know how to grow sweet potatoes in a container.
You need a huge container. So sweet potatoes are pretty aggressive. If you're familiar with sweet potato vine, it's the same species, but the vine will produce the tubers, but they don't taste that great. It's the cultivated varieties that we want, and you would want a container with a volume of at least 20 gallons.
Wow.
So it's something that I don't know how practical it is. You can do it, but you need
a
good
volume.
You
almost need a farm.
You do.
To plant sweet potatoes. Sweet potatoes,
right? Yeah, the potatoes will get 3x3, the tops will. Sweet potatoes creep along the ground, and you can let them intermix. And you plant them, I'm trying to remember if it's 18 inches or 2 foot spacing, mm-hmm. but they do occupy, you know, quite a big space, at least 3 feet wide. So you might get away with a slightly smaller container, but they do need a lot. The root volume and the size of the plant makes it, you know, that they're not really too friendly for gardening in small spaces.
They were also wondering about, can you plant the ones that are sold in the grocery stores?
They, I suspect, are oftentimes treated with a plant hormone that prevents them from rooting. Sometimes they will. I mean, all I could say is they could try it. There are some videos on YouTube on using sweet potato tubers to create new slips. Mm-hmm. And so they can watch those videos. And I think you could have success. I just ordered a bunch of sweet potato slips from Johnny's for some work I'm doing with USU. And I like a variety called Mayhan that only Johnny sells. I'm not promoting Johnny's over others, but I've had more success with the Mayhan because it seems to produce the grocery store size sweet potatoes. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of other varieties I've tried produce a great big 1 pound to 2 pound huge sweet potato, and you only get one per plant. And that's a little more common in clay soils, but Mayhan seems to be more resistant to doing that.
So explain for me, I bought some seeds from Park Seed a couple of weeks ago. We were talking about the mini me cucumbers. They're like what you see in Costco. They're like the cocktail cucumbers because I wanted to grow these smaller ones because I love them. I love to eat them. I mean, without even peeling them, they're delicious. But explain to me why it was $11 for 10 seeds.
They're probably hybrid.
They are definitely hybrid.
They may be the exclusive dealer of them, and where they have a patented variety that's their own. And sometimes producing these hybrids is very expensive because they have to have somebody sitting there with, in essence, a little mini paintbrush going to a female flower of one cucumber to the male flower to female, and hand pollinating every flower.
And okay, so I'm understanding better now.
So you can run into that. There are seeds that I've seen that you can pay 50 cents a seed for some of these hybrids. Petunias are, because the easy to grow ones, or at least easy to germinate, and they need to be started in January, are coated because the petunia seeds are like dust. And so that can cause them to be more expensive. Now, you wouldn't need to coat a cucumber seed, but usually it's because it's exclusive, it's new, and they may have had to hand pollinate every flower.
Do I need to plant all the seeds this year? Can I save half of them?
You could save half of them. And what I would do is just put them in a mason jar, or as you know, even a smaller jar, or even one of the old glass baby food jars would work, if you can even still find those. I think they're mostly plastic now. But you want something that seals, and you can just put them in a cool room or refrigerate them or even freeze them.
Okay.
And then bring them out in the spring.
Could I take my own seeds from those cucumbers?
No. Well, you could in theory, but you would need to probably hand pollinate them.
Oh my.
And then protect the flowers from other pollinators.
That's never happening.
And then you would need to let the cucumbers grow to maturity. So they're going to get bigger, going to turn yellow. And when they turn, you know, yellow, harvest the seeds. And so it's possible, but do you want to?
No. But at least you explained to me why the seeds are $1 a piece.
Because
It was like, what in the world? That is so expensive. If I didn't love them, I would never have done
that. Yes, newer specialty things that are expensive. I'm surprised that you can even find the seed, honestly.
Well,
because
may not be able to this week. It was a couple of weeks ago. So
yeah, just because a lot of these, you know, we get a lot of questions about cotton candy grapes, and there's another variety out that's a super sweet, mildly, you know, really nice flavored grape. I can't remember the name of it, but a lot of times these plants have patents that last, I think, for 17 years before they become available to the public.
The other thing I thought was really interesting, like I was doing research on, I went right to the Park Seed site, but actually they were cheaper on Amazon.
Well, a lot of seed distributors have Amazon stores.
Oh.
And I'll get on Amazon and I ordered, peanuts. And I've got a project going on with Dean Miner, which we can talk about another time. But I ordered peanuts and then some other specialty tomato seeds. And when the receipts came in, they came in an Amazon package with a Park Seed receipt inside of it. And so you found them actually less expensive on Amazon than on Park Seed's website.
Mm-hmm. I did. I'm like, okay, I'm going that way. Free shipping. You've got it.
Yeah. There's a tomato I ordered called, is it Sweet Baby Jane, Sweet Baby Girl? It's a red tomato, and it's really, really sweet. And the only place I could find it was Amazon. And it's, again, one of those situations you get 10 seeds for like $5. But
shopping around is always a good idea.
It is. But I want to grow some of these out because they're one of the better cherry tomatoes I've ever had.
All right. We're going to take a break. Come back with your calls. We do have a couple of callers now on the line. Number to call, 801-575-8255. You can also text us at 57500. Thank you for spending your Saturday morning with the KSL Greenhouse. Taking your calls, 801-575-8255, or you can text at 57500. Next listener, Ton, would like to know, can they still cut back their butterfly bush? It's already leafing out.
They can. I wish I would have done it a couple of weeks ago, but just get it done.
Okay. Next listener wants to know, can you start corn on the cob inside and then move it out in May?
Not a great idea. Corn is so easy to germinate. And it actually doesn't transplant super well. It will, but I would just plant it from seed outside. They can plant it as early as late April. We're supposed to be a little warmer this spring than normal. So, but it's just one of those things that it germinates fairly readily already. And so I just don't find it worth the resources. Yeah.
All right. Mark is on the line in Kaysville. Good morning, Mark. What was your question?
Morning. I've got a pixie peach and an early Alberta peach, and I'm wondering if there's any differences in how I should prune them, being that the pixie stays so much smaller and the leaves are so, so much denser.
Well, we're going to be talking pruning next hour on peaches, but you're going to use the same form, but the pixie, you know, is just smaller to where you're using an open center. And so just make sure that, you know, you can, on the early Alberta, you can take up to 50% of the wood out. The pixie is so small that you can still prune it fairly heavily, but just be careful that you don't prune it back to nubs.
Okay. And then are almonds the same way, where you can prune them that hard since they're so closely related?
Yes, you can. You can prune almonds fairly hard like you would a peach.
Okay, cool. And then I did have another question on, it's on water gardening, so that may not be your specialty, but I've heard that you can put irises actually underwater in a bog, certain kinds of irises, like a flag iris. If I were to buy one planted in a pot with dirt, could I move that to the bog, or does it have to be from a plant that was already in a bog?
I think you could probably start one and do it, but who I would talk to is Doug over at J&J. He's their pond person. Go in on, I'm not sure when his day off is, but go in on a weekday, not a Saturday, and talk to him about pond plants, because I don't know anybody who is more knowledgeable than him about what to do with ponds. And so I actually think, and I'm not saying you need to buy them there, but J&J in the past has carried the bog iris as a as a pond plant, but Doug would know exactly what to do.
Great. Thank you so much for your help.
Mark, thank you so much for your call. In about 10 minutes, we will be talking about how to prune peach trees in depth. So if you want to stay listening for that, we'll have that for you as well. Next listener, Ton, wants to know, any recommendations for a ground cover or shrub that would do well between two flowering crab apples?
Ground cover or shrub between two flowering crab apples. I wish we had the distances, and I hate to answer such things because there's just kind of nebulous.
Okay.
Because we need more information, so they might have to be brave and call in.
All right. We're going to take a break, come back with the top of the hour news. When we do come back, as we mentioned this morning, we will be talking about pruning. Is it mainly peach trees?
Mainly
peach trees. Yep. And then in the 10 o'clock hour, we are going to be talking about planting trees in general. So if you're thinking about planting trees, you want to stay tuned for that. About 10:07, we'll be talking about that. Thank you for listening to the KSL Greenhouse. When we come back, we'll be taking your calls and your questions. The plant of the week this morning was the rock cress, and you can find out more about that on the KSL Greenhouse Facebook page.
Never seen the sky so blue. Birds are singing, I got nothing to do. Hey, hey,
hey, hey.
It's a sunny day.
Sunny day now.
My pocket's empty, my cupboard's bare. But call me illogical, I just don't care.
Hey, hey,
hey, hey. It's just a sunny day.
Hey, 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 it's a sunny day.
It's just a sunny day.
It's the KSL. KSL Greenhouse. Expert tips for flowers, trees, gardens, and soil. Our hosts are Maria Chaleos and Ton Bettis on KSL News Radio.
Good morning. Thank you for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse. We're going to talk about our top of the hour feature, but we'll come back with your calls and your questions. You can call us at 801-575-8255. You can text us at 57500. This morning, we wanted to start the 9 o'clock hour talking about peach trees, peach tree pruning. And, Ton, people can prune now, right?
They need to prune now. Things are moving along really quickly. And so we need to get this pruning done. So peaches are our most commonly grown fruit. And they're one that in homeowners' yards oftentimes don't last longer than about 10 years because of either a lack of maintenance or a lack of knowledge about how to maintain them properly.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's the peach tree borer that is problematic, which I'll quickly bring up. The adults lay eggs on the, especially at the base of the tree, but anywhere on the trunk and lower limbs, and the eggs hatch and they will then drill or bore into the trunk. And you, about 80% of the time, find them at the base of the tree. You might have to move the soil a little bit, but you'll see what looks like a canker with gum, you know, pine sap or pine gum coming out of it, and it's really gelatinous. And so to prevent that, you need to spray something along the lines of permethrin or spinosad, which is oftentimes organic, and you can look up the timing on those. But you spray from early to mid-June through mid-September.
Okay, remind people where to get the timing.
Yeah, so the timings are, but subscribe to the USU Pest Lab Fruit Tree Updates. And so if you do an internet search of USU Pest Lab subscription, for, you know, fruit update, something similar, it'll bring the page up. Sign up. They're free. We don't share information with anybody. And they will tell you down to the day about when you need to spray. So there is that portion of it. But I wanted to bring that up because pruning and proper care will help keep the tree healthier and make the trees less susceptible to being targeted by the peach tree borer because they focus on stress trees because they're easier to penetrate and to eat, I suppose.
Yeah.
So
pruning is so important with peach trees too, because if you don't prune them properly, the branches get too heavy and then they break.
They do. And so that leads us into our first principle, and we need folks to stop pruning all the wood out of the middle of the trees. It's just like we have to, you know, we have to clean it all out. There's just this psychological urge to clean every last branch out of the middle of the tree. We need to stop it. Because what will happen, as you mentioned, is we prune all the branches out of the middle and leave all the fruiting wood at the edges of the branches, at the top and the sides. And as that fruit matures, if you can imagine holding your arm out horizontally with a 10-pound weight, you're not going to be able to support that weight very long. And your arm, you'll need to bring it down. And that's exactly what happens to the peach trees in March, or not March, but August,
mm-hmm.
when the peaches are ripening and quickly expanding. If you have 25 or 30 or 40 peaches out on the very edge of a limb, that limb is going to fold down like an umbrella. And so in commercial orchards, they will use the open center pruning, but they have branches that are a foot to 18 inches long at the longest along most of the length of the structural branches. And the fruit is harvested from those side branches. And because peaches only fruit on one-year-old wood, all that old wood can come out, or most of it. And so this year's new branches is next year's peaches. And so they thin them in the spring about this time so that they have fruit evenly distributed all the way along the length of the branch.
Okay. How else can they learn about pruning peach trees? It's kind of tough to describe pruning a peach tree over the radio.
Michelle will post a fact sheet to our social media, especially Facebook, and then if they go to the USU Extension YouTube channel, there are several videos about how to prune peaches. JD Gunnell and Jerry Goodspeed are on one or two of them. I think we've got another one up, but there are videos on YouTube on the specifics of how to prune peaches.
Anything you want, anything else you want to share with our listeners?
Well, when you prune a peach, and it's the only fruit tree that you can do it to for the most part, is you can take up to 50% of the wood off of the peach. But definitely watch those videos. And remember the three D's of pruning: dead branches, diseased branches, and dumb branches. The dumb branches are the crossing branches, the branches that are growing straight down, the branches are growing straight up in the air that will be weak. But if you can remember that principle of dead, diseased, and dumb, that will get you a long way.
I like that. It does make it a lot easier to decide how to prune the tree.
It does.
And don't take out those new branches in the center of the tree.
No, and you can have the center a little bit opened, but you need to have the fruiting wood. You know, if it's in the lawn, you need to be able to mow under the tree, but you need to have fruiting wood along the entire length of the branch so that you evenly distribute the peach load. And then when the peaches are about dime size, thin them so you have one peach for every 6 inches to foot of branch.
All right. Number to call with your questions, 801-575-8255. You can text us, 57500. Good morning. Thank you for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse. Maria and Ton taking your calls and questions. Next listener, Ton, wants to know, how do you transplant rhubarb?
You want to dig it when it is dormant, preferably in late fall. If you wanted to do it now, and if it's already popping up, I would wait. But what you'll find is that you have what's called the crown, and that's where the leaves come up from. But if you carefully work the dirt away from the top of the crown, you'll find little nodes or buds, and they're a little swelling. And you want three or four of them per division. So if you use a shovel to cut it apart, you want a good 3 or 4 inch wide piece of that rhubarb with 3 or 4 or 5 little buds on there. And so you can move that with as many roots as you can get to a new home. But if they've already started to push out of the ground, I would wait until this fall after they go dormant.
All right. Next listener would like to know, they say we touched on this last week. I think we've touched on this for the last few weeks. But they say you said don't dethatch now. They want to know, but when do you dethatch?
Only when you absolutely need to. There isn't a calendar date. It's really rough on your lawn. And if you have a minor thatch problem, you may be able to eliminate it by using aeration and proper lawn watering. So aerate in the spring and fall and water less often so that your lawn dries out moderately between irrigations. You know, one thing they can do is take a shovel and just kind of shove it into the ground in the lawn, wiggle it back and forth so they can see the soil profile. And where the soil stops, there will be a layer of what looks like dead grass. And then eventually you will see where the grass is growing from. And what that usually is actually dead roots and crowns. There's not a lot of grass blades in it. And if there's about a half inch of thatch underneath where the blades grow, that's healthy and you don't need to remove it. If you've got more than an inch, they may consider dethatching once just to get rid of it, but dethatching isn't going to do them any good longer term if they can't solve why the thatch is forming in excessive amounts.
Why do you think there's always this confusion about dethatching? Because was it once recommended to dethatch?
People did dethatch once a year. I remember going out with my dad a few times with rakes and areas that we might, you know, we thought we had too much thatch. And raking it out, and you do pull a lot of dead crowns and some grass blades and things out in the spring. But if they're left intact, if your lawn's healthy and there's not more than a half inch of thatch, by early May, the lawn usually fills in and that dead grass breaks down. But if you need to, you can, but it's just really rough on the lawn. The best time to do it is in the spring when the temperatures are consistently 70 degrees or in late August as we start to cool down so that the cooler temperatures allow the lawn to recover more quickly.
All right, next listener wants to know, which strawberry do you like, the Albion or the Seacrest, and why?
Never eaten either of them.
Okay.
Both of them, I think, are popular varieties and are good. The main strawberries I've grown are actually, I can't even pronounce it. It's spelled honey eye, but H-O-N-E-Y-O-Y-E or something. It's got a really strange... You shouldn't be allowed to name cultivars with unpronounceable names, but Honey Eye, the Seascape is another one that is decent. But I think that most of the modern varieties you'll be pretty happy with if you can find one that ripens when you want it and you treat the strawberries well and do what you should to keep them productive. And so it just boils down to if you want a June bearer, which are going to be the more productive ones, you get a lot of berries over a period of about a month that you can process into jams, jellies, freeze them, whatever. Or if you want an everbearer, which you'll get a moderately heavy crop in the spring, and then some production through the rest of the summer, and then a little bit heavier as we cool down. If you're going to do that, you want to plant what's called a day-neutral variety, because they're a little more likely to bloom. But once we're consistently above 90, the strawberries oftentimes stop producing and then start again in the fall.
How early can they plant strawberries?
It depends on where you live, but you want it to still be cool, but most danger of frost to be gone. Because if you plant them and they break dormancy and we get a frost, that could do them in, and so they may need to be covered.
All right. Rick is on the line in Alpine. Good morning, Rick. What was your question?
Just had a question. A question about raspberries and blackberries with regards to fertilizing. How much fertilizing to get production of fruit without so much that you just get vine and no fruit?
Almost none. The raspberries and blackberries are very productive without a lot of extra fertilizer. And for homeowners, I don't usually recommend fertilizing them. If you have raspberries, when they're done fruiting in the spring, you can do a light application then, but it's going to be pretty minimal.
What about strawberries?
Again, like fairly minimal on those two, because if you do any fertilization, it's after they're done fruiting, and then... don't do it again unless you feel like you absolutely have to.
And last of all, then, what about those peach trees fertilizing?
Peach trees, if you need to fertilize peach trees, you do it in mid to late March. Depending on the trunk width, if it's a new tree, a quarter cup is plenty. If it's a larger tree, you know, a half to three quarters of a cup. But you spread that under the canopy of the tree. And if you need to, you can do it again in mid-May in the hobby orchards. But I don't like, in hobby orchards, I don't like pruning peach as much past mid-May, because nitrogen delays dormancy and you need the trees to be able to use that nitrogen, you know, through the early summer when it's still cooler, and then still have plenty of opportunity in the fall to go dormant.
Great. Thank you very much.
All right, Rick, thanks for your call this morning. Next listener, Tana, wants to know, when can a honeysuckle be pruned?
Right after it's done blooming is the time to prune them. If you need to renovate, so to speak, and just cut them way back, you can in the spring, but they just won't flower for 2 to 3 years after the fact.
Okay, next listener wants to know, how are dwarf apple trees with multiple varieties pruned?
I'm always leery of the fruit cocktail trees or the multiple variety trees, just because you need to be able to identify where all the varieties are. Mm-hmm. And you usually have, so let's say you have four varieties, one or two of them grow much more aggressively than the other two, and so you have to prune them harder. And so if it's the only option you have, you can do it, and it's fine, but it's just better in theory than in practice.
John is wondering, he has a 2 to 3 year old peach tree that didn't produce the new growth that you usually prune, and he's wondering what might be happening.
It was a peach tree?
Mm-hmm.
There could be a lot of things going on. There could be a borer in it. It could have gotten a
only 2 to 3 years old.
Yeah, vascular wilt disease. There could be a girdling root. It's just something that requires more investigation.
Could it be just a slow grower and it just didn't?
Not unless it's a dwarf peach. Okay. Peaches should be growing 16 to 18 inches a year when they're young.
Okay, maybe John, you could send in a picture on Facebook, on the Facebook Messenger, and we could take a look at it there.
Or call in so we can get more details that way.
There you go. Next person wants to know, is it too early to weed and feed your lawn?
It is. The weed and feed needs it. You want the lawn weeds going, and so I would give it another 2 or 3 weeks at least. Mm-hmm. And if you use weed and feed, the lawn needs to be wet when you apply it so that the weed and feed sticks to the weeds. Otherwise, if you apply when it's dry, it doesn't do a very good job.
All right. Next listener would like to know, how do you get rid of elm beetles? What do you do with these things?
Unfortunately, the only way to get rid of them is to get rid of the elm trees. It's usually Siberian elm.
I don't like that answer
either. No, but because they're so mobile, even if you spray them out of your yard, they're back within a few days. And so the best thing you can do to keep them out of the house is to seal up the foundation, use some caulking to seal up the cracks, make sure that the windowsills are sealed, get door sweeps that rub on the ground so that they can't go underneath to try to keep them out. But unless the elm trees are gone, they're going to be there.
All right. Next person wants to know, how close do apple trees need to be for pollination?
Within 100 yards,
so
usually.
So if it's 2 or 3 houses down the street, is that close
perfectly
enough?
Fine.
Okay.
Yeah, the apples, there are 1 or 2 crab apples that will not pollinate others. You know, spring snow is the main one. But even fruiting crab apples, if the crab apple gets any sort of fruit on it, they're suitable pollinators for apple trees too. So in urban and suburban settings, I just don't worry about it because 95% of the time you're going to get sufficient pollination.
Okay, we need to take a break for the bottom of the hour news. You can call us. Phone lines are open at 801-575-8255. You can also text us your question, 57500.
The Greenhouse Show on KSL News Radio.
Good morning. Thank you for spending your Saturday morning with the KSL Greenhouse. Maria Chaleos, Ton Bettis with you this morning. Taking your calls at 801-575-8255. You can also text us at 57500. Todd, our next listener wants to know, when should they fertilize red bud trees that they planted last spring?
Any time is fine. You know, it's one of those things that we think we must. You know, it's, I have to fertilize it. If they do, I think just less than a quarter cup of lawn fertilizer would be more than sufficient, maybe even like an eighth of a cup. And I would just spread it around the root ball of the tree and do no more.
Okay, next listener says they got the advisory to spray dormant spray, but rain is coming, so should they wait?
If it's going to rain, you need 24 hours so that it's effective.
So probably not.
I would
looking
wait.
Outside, it looks kind of iffy out
it's
there.
It's a little gloomy.
Next listener says, what if their apricot tree already has blossoms and it's time to spray the dormant oil?
Don't spray unless you want to take the year off of getting fruit.
Okay, dangerous thing to do. Luann is on the line in Ogden. Good morning, Luann. What was your question?
Thank you for taking my call. I have a set of roses that we bought at the grocery store about, it was around around the 14th of February. The buds or the flowers on the top, I still have some of. They are dead. They're gone. But down the shoots of the stem, there are some shoots of clusters of leaves coming out of that stem. And I wonder, there's no roots on the bottom of the stem, just on the side of the stem. Can I plant those, or are they going to grow, or what do I need to do?
So it was a bouquet of roses, you said?
Yes.
Okay. And you've left them in water, and they've started to root out a bit.
They haven't rooted out, but the stem has thrown out some shoots of leaves.
I would throw it out. It's just not worth, I don't know. There's a couple things going on. One, those could be patented roses and illegal for you to propagate them.
What?
So that could be one thing, but then trying to root them, you can do that, and you can get on YouTube or just look up extension and rose propagation, and it will tell you how to do it in water and a few different things. But okay, it's just for me personally, just for efficiency, I'm just going to go to a garden center and find one that has the roses that I like and plant mm-hmm. that. I don't know. It's just easier. But if you want to do it for the hobby and interest, there are ways to do it. But, you know, it's probably going to be a year to 2 years before you get something up to size that you can plant outside.
Okay. So there's probably no chance that they would start rooting out in the water?
Well, it isn't that there's no chance. It's just, is it worth it? Mm-hmm. You know, so
if you need a hobby,
if you want a hobby and you want to take up to 2 years to be able to plant it outside, you could try it. But it's just one of those things that, you know, for me, when I pay $25 or $30 for a rose bush at the garden center, it's well worth it.
I just want to know if it would ever work.
It would. You know, in theory, it would. It's just a practicality.
Okay. Could I use Roton on it or something like that?
You could try. It's just, I mean, if you're bent on doing it and you're going to do it, get some Roton, and you would need to get a pot with vermiculite or perlite or, you know, yes, a really light potting soil and put it in there. And you would cut the stems back to where you had two buds above ground and two below. And
oh, okay,
you would have to let it root out in the container, and what you would do is get a Ziploc or a similar plastic bag, put it over the top of the pot, and I would put 6 or 7 pencil holes in it. So, okay, and you need to support it so that the bag doesn't collapse on the rose, but that keeps the humidity higher. And mm-hmm, when the rose starts to leaf out, you can, you don't want to take that bag off immediately, but it's going to take between 4 and 8 weeks for those cuttings to start to form roots to okay do it. But to get that rooted out enough, it's going to be at least next spring before you can put it outside.
Okay. It's just full of shoots of leaves on the stems.
Well, and that's
already
not really a great thing because there's oh no roots to support the leaves. And yeah, because it's already forming the leaves, you would have to take the leaves off for it to have oh any chance of forming enough roots to support the leaves longer term.
Okay. Okay. All right.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Luann, thank for you your call this morning. Next listener, Tom, wants to know, is painting the peach tree trunk with borer killer as effective as spraying?
You don't ever do that with concentrate. It could penetrate through the trunk because of the what the pesticide is mixed into are usually petroleum-based. And when you dilute that with water, there's additives in there to make it soluble with water. And so I guess you could. It's not an approved application method. So I can't really say, oh, do it. But yeah, it would work if you wanted to. The other thing I do is just get a spray bottle, a gallon sprayer, even a quart sprayer, if I've just got 1 or 2 trees, and mix enough to fill my quart sprayer and use it like a spray painter. So where you want that bark wet, but not dripping. And so you can actually maybe spray it a couple times to get it on there, but just don't do that with concentrate.
All right. Susan is on the line in South Ogden. Good morning, Susan. What was your question?
Good morning. I have a Canadian chokecherry tree that is probably 10 years in the ground, 30, 35 feet high. It looked like it was getting really full in the center, so I had somebody come and give me a bid to do some thinning of the tree, and their bid was $675. So my question is, do those trees need to be thinned?
No,
and
they don't.
Okay, so I can just save my $675.
Yeah, I mean, that trees, if you have a bunch of crossing branches that are rubbing against each other, you can go in and maybe prune 5 or 10% of the branches out. But there's no inherent reason that those trees need to be regularly pruned. You know, in the wild, they're not, and they do okay. And so mm-hmm unless there's going to be major structural issues that are going to create a hazard or affect the health of the tree, I would just leave it alone.
Well, I've been looking at it because it doesn't have leaves yet, and there's a lot of small branches that cross each other, but of course it's way higher than what I could ever get up there and do, and that's why I called a professional company to come and look at it. But after hearing their bid, I'm kind of talking myself out of it.
Well, and if you did do some pruning on it, it wouldn't hurt the tree. It may improve it a bit structurally, but there's no inherent reason that the tree needs to be pruned unless you've got really bad crotch angles or, you know, major branches that are touching that might cause, you know, a risk in the future to the tree, or if a branch is a safety hazard. But I would just leave it be.
Okay. Thank you very much.
All right, Susan, thanks for your call this morning. We're going to take a break. Come back with Sarah. We'll be up next. Number to call, 801-575-8255, or you can text 57500. Good morning. Thank you for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse. Maria and Ton with you, taking your calls and questions. Let's get right back to our phone lines. We have Sarah, who is in West Point. Good morning, Sarah. What was your question this morning?
Hey, good morning. So I was actually listening in last week, and somebody had texted in asking if you can grow ramps in Utah. And you guys didn't really have an answer. I think maybe you weren't familiar with ramps. They mostly grow back east. And I just wanted to, I was hoping maybe that listener would be on today. I wanted to let them know that, yes, you can. I've harvested ramps this week. It's an allium that grows wild in the forests back in the eastern part of the country. But I've got a couple of patches in my yard. They grow from, just from bulbs, like other alliums. And I just wanted them to know that it's possible.
So how long did it take for the patches to form?
I planted these about 2 years ago.
And how
so they're
wide
still
are
kind
they?
Of small patches.
Okay.
Not very wide. I would say I've got a couple of them, maybe 6 inches at this point. I also have a patch of a European relative, Ramson.
Uh-huh.
It's kind of sometimes called bear garlic, which is similar but a little bit, doesn't grow quite as tall and thin as ramps do. And those I've had for probably 10 years. And it's spread, you know. It spreads slowly, but it spreads.
So we're talking about an edible plant. For those people who are not familiar with this, how do you use them? What do they taste like?
So it tastes a little bit garlicky. You eat the greens. They are a very early spring green, which I love. Like I said, I was eating them this week. A lot of people eat them in soups, salads. I actually like to put them on sandwiches.
All right.
So.
That's great. So are you growing, are you above the bluff or below the bluff?
Below.
Below.
Yeah.
So your soil's a little bit more loamy instead of sandy. So that's good. So that's a little bit more average with the rest of the Wasatch Front. Yeah, that's one in all my years I'd never run into. And a work colleague texts me and says, yeah, I need to hit you over the head with a bat because they do exist. And
yeah, but it makes sense. I mean, like I said, they don't grow here. They're very common back east. They'll have ramp festivals in the spring. People go and forage for them out in the forests.
You know, and reading about them, they've become endangered from over harvesting.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's good to know they grow here, because I did find there were a few sites online where you could order them.
Yep. Yeah.
Right.
They're fantastic early spring green.
Very good. Well, thank
Sarah,
you.
Appreciate your call. Thanks for calling today.
All right. Have a good day.
You too. Next listener, Ton, says, in the past, for fruit trees, you recommend using half the fertilizer now, then half in May. How much fertilizer in total per tree, and what kind is best?
The best I can tell them is to download USU's fact sheets on the particular fruit tree. There will be some fertilizer recommendations, because it all depends on the size of the tree.
Okay.
So I can't really give a good answer.
Specific answer on that.
Because in some of the fact sheets, in 5-year increments, you know, or the width of the tree, but fruit trees just don't need a lot of fertilizer, especially in hobby orchards. And so, you know, my dad's orchard, my father-in-law's orchard, I guess his gets some lawn fertilizer, But fruit trees oftentimes do just fine on very minimal fertilization. If they're in the lawn and you're fertilizing your lawn two or three times a year, that is plenty. But if they're on their own, then under the canopy, you know, anywhere from an eighth to of a cup to up to a cup, depending on the size of the tree. But it's just really hard to say.
All right. Next listener is Blake in Pleasant View. Good morning, Blake. What was your question this morning?
Morning, Tom. Last week I called. My celebrity maple tree is 25 feet tall, trunk's about 14 inch diameter. You told me to put some iron on it. I've also noticed this past winter, about 5 feet up, all the bark has now separated, come off of the trunk of the tree on half of it. So there's big, huge bark come off.
Is it on the south or west side of the tree?
What's that? It's on the south side of the tree.
Southwest winter injury. Maples have really thin bark that's easily damaged during the winter because you get sap flow during the day and then it freezes at night and burst the cells in the conductive tissue.
Okay. My dad, Gary, said, you better call Tom. Here I am again.
So, there's nothing you can do right now. Just let the bark flake off. If they've got jagged edges, you can carefully cut it. But if you start to wrap the tree in the winter with white tree tape and take it off in the spring, the bark will actually heal back over a period of 3 or 4 years.
Okay, so maybe wrap it with that claw stuff in May.
Not in May, in October.
In October.
And
take
it off in March.
Okay. Oh, I see. I got you. All right, well, thanks, Ben.
You're welcome.
All right, Blake, thanks for your call this morning. Next listener, Ton, says, I planted a Honeycrisp tree 4 years ago, still has not produced one apple. Is that unusual?
No, it's not unusual.
How long does it usually take?
This, 90% of the trees will produce fruit within 3 or 4 years, but you get 1 out of 10 that sometimes won't produce flowers for up to 10 years.
Oh, my goodness.
And I don't know why they do that, because even they will have flowers at the garden center, and then you bring them home, and 10 years later, there's still nothing. But I've seen it happen, and I don't have a good scientific answer why. But what will happen is over that period of time, you'll see 3 or 4 flowers, and then the next year, 10 or 15 or 20, and then by the 3rd or 4th, they're in full production.
So if it looks healthy, just be patient?
Be patient. Make sure that you're not pruning the fruiting wood off, because that's also a cause of that. If the tree's pruned really heavily, that will sometimes shock it into... When I say that is such an unscientific thing, but you cut a lot of the mature wood off, and it forms juvenile growth that takes 3 or 4 years to mature. Mm-hmm. So that could be a cause also.
Okay. Next listener wants to know what the trick is to getting Arp rosemary to overwinter in Kaysville.
Put it in a protected spot is the best I can tell them. And it doesn't like really clay soil. And so if it's in really wet situations, if you're in West Kaysville near the lake, that's going to be a little tougher to do, but it does best against a west wall, somewhere where the soil doesn't freeze and it's not too exposed, but it does need 8 hours of sunlight a day.
Jacob in Tooele says the Virginia creeper has consumed his backyard and is choking everything out. How do they get rid of it?
Boy, the fall is the best time to do that, but they can start clipping it and dabbing every stem. And so you don't take it clear to the ground, but leave 3 or 4 inches of stem above ground or branch. Cut it and immediately get concentrated Roundup with a inexpensive watercolor paintbrush and just paint the top of the stem with concentrated Roundup. Do that on every one. It will try to come back a few times, but that's going to be the best bet at eliminating it.
Next listener wants to know, are ashes from leaves good fertilizer?
Not really. They are used, especially when there wasn't commercial fertilizer, they would add especially potassium into the soil. We have already generally a lot of potassium in our soils. And so if it was a 16th of an inch once every year or two, it's not going to harm anything. But to just go and spread a 1/4 inch, it's not a great thing.
All right, we're going to take a break for the top of the hour news. And when we come back, we're going to have some tips for you on tree planting. And thank you for joining us on this Saturday morning for the KSL Greenhouse. Phone lines are open. You can call us 801-575-8255, or you can text us your questions at 57500. I
haven't seen the sky so blue. The birds are singing, I got nothing to do. Hey, hey. It's a sunny day.
Sunny day now.
My pocket's empty, my cupboard's bare. But call me illogical, I just don't care.
Hey, 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 hey.
It's just a sunny day.
Hey, 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 it's a sunny day.
It's just a sunny day.
It's the KSL Greenhouse. Expert tips for flowers, trees, gardens, and soil. Our hosts are Maria Chaleos and Ton Bettis on KSL News Radio.
Good morning. Thank you for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse. We'll be taking your calls in just a few minutes after the top of the hour feature. Number to call 801-575-8255, and the phone lines are open, or you can text us your questions at 57500. It is that time of year where if you want to plant trees, it's a great time to do it, Ton, while the trees are still kind of dormant. But oftentimes, people don't plant them right. They often plant them too deeply and do some other things as well. So let's talk about tree planting. Where do we start?
Healthy trees. And the spring is a great time to do it because the nursery stock usually isn't root bound if it's in a pot, or if you're planting the bigger bald and burlap trees, those are the ones in the wire baskets. They also don't have a whole bunch of roots that are going to have to be cut off because they root out into sawdust during the summer. And so it's just a great time to plant trees. And so you want to find one that has a nice canopy that you're happy with. And then we could do a whole segment on just getting them home and off a truck.
No doubt about it, right?
But once they're home, it's critical to plant them correctly. Now, we do have a fact sheet that Michelle has posted on planting trees, but it's always good to talk about it.
Let's talk about it, but then do go back and look at the fact sheet, because one great thing about it is it does show you how deeply to plant the tree and why. But let's talk about that first, because when we were talking about this a few weeks ago, you said to me, the biggest thing is don't dig that hole too deeply. Why?
Because if the tree is too deep in the ground, over time, it can cause the trunk to rot because you have where it wants to have wood and bark instead of roots. And so it can cause some rotting of the trunk, but it also interferes with oxygen in the soil. If you plant it too deeply, there oftentimes may not be enough oxygen, so it promotes root rot. And then if it's too deep in the soil, especially when you've excavated that hole, the soil isn't as dense as it is adjacent to where the hole isn't. And so water penetrates into that hole more easily and fills it up. And it's easier to overwater the tree accidentally.
Last year, we were planting an evergreen, kind of a spruce in the backyard, and we dug the hole. We bought the tree, and it was in one of those big, 50-gallon container things?
Yeah, probably at number 25, number 30.
Yeah, and we're like, okay, so we dig the hole, and then afterwards we realized that the hole was way too big because the root ball itself wasn't nearly the size of that container.
And so that's not necessarily a bad thing, as long as it wasn't too deep.
So wider's not the issue.
Yes. And but there's a saying in the nursery industry that if you're buying a $300 tree, you want to dig a $300 hole, but you go sideways and not down. And so some mistakes people make is they'll dig the hole 18 inches deeper and then mix compost in and refill it. That's not a great thing, because the compost decomposes and the tree sinks into the soil over a year or two.
Put the compost on top of the soil after
you're done. You do it all, and a lot of times you don't even need it, because the compost sometimes can cause the tree to keep its roots around the root ball because the soil is nice and loose, and it starts to run into soil that doesn't have compost, and it starts to circle a little bit. And sometimes, not always, those trees have a little bit more of a tendency to form a circling root and maybe topple over time. And so We generally don't recommend mixing compost into the soil of your newly planted trees. Just use your normal soil, and you can put some compost on top, as you said, but generally do not mix it into the soil that you're putting back around the roots.
Okay, so how do we decide how deep to make that hole?
So you need to find the graft union on the tree. And so as you follow the trunk down toward the potting, the pot, there will be a knot at the base of the tree where they grafted it, because how you get an autumn blaze maple over and over and over is that you take cuttings and graft it onto a maple rootstock. And so where you basically paste those two together, it forms a knot, which is called the graft union. And that has to be above ground. The other thing you need to look for is called the root flare. And so as you look at a tree trunk in a pot, as you go down, there's a natural gradual flare to the trunk. And as it flares really widely where the roots start. And so where the root flare starts, it needs to be above ground so that the roots are just under the soil surface.
Mm, okay. Root flare above ground.
Yes.
Making
and
notes.
In some pots, if the tree, let's say you buy a number 30 or a number 25 tree, which we used to call a 25 gallon, but anyway, we don't need to get into that. But say you buy a trunk caliper 1¾ to 2 inch in a big container. That tree may have been transplanted 4 or 5 times over the years to get it into a pot that size. And every time it's transplanted, there's a tendency to plant it just a little deep. And so you may not even see the root flare in those bigger trees. And so you need to excavate the soil away from the trunk until you find the root flare, and that root flare stays above ground.
Okay. So once we get to that point, we've decided how deep the hole is going to be. Now we have this root ball that is contained by burlap or a wire cage. Or now what do we do with that?
So you leave that wire cage intact because you need to be able to get the tree into the hole, and that's the only thing holding the root ball together. And so what I like to do when I dig my hole, I will dig one side of this hole so that it has a more shallow angle, so it's more of a wedge shaped, and you can roll the tree down that into the hole and you get the tree positioned, make sure it's at the right height, and then you can put a little bit of dirt around the bottom of the root ball, 3 or 4 inches, to hold the tree in place. But you need your hole wide enough that you can clip the wire basket away. And so you need some wire cutters, and you don't need to remove the entire basket because the roots don't come out the bottom of the root ball. They come out the sides. And so you clip the top 2/3 of the basket away. And you can leave the bottom of the basket in and then carefully cut the burlap away, cut the twine away from the trunk. And then while your hole is, when you haven't filled it in yet, you need a couple of stakes, either T-posts. I'd use an 8-foot T-post or an 8-foot ponderosa post. You can buy those from IFA or Steve Regan. I think Cal Ranch may sell them too. But you can get ponderosa stakes, but you want to stake the tree from two sides. And you put those stakes in so they stay in, get the tree buried in, and then you get some twine or rope, and you lash it around the post and the trunk, but where you attach the ropes to the trunk, you want to get a cotton cloth or like an old hand towel, wrap it around the trunk, and then attach those ropes. You always tie your knots to the stake and just loop it around the trunk on the two sides. And you want a little bit of play so that trunk can move a little bit in the wind, but not so much play that it'll blow over.
All right.
And so after that tree has been in the ground one calendar year, you can remove the rope and the stakes.
Okay. How much water does, oh no, wait, before the water, do we amend, do we put any sort of
fertilizer?
No fertilizers,
nothing, because you want the tree to struggle a little bit for nutrients so it grows lots of roots looking for them. If you fertilize the tree the first year, you can actually inhibit a lot of good root growth.
Okay.
And the roots stay in the old root ball because there's plenty of nutrients there. And so you want that tree to search for nutrients, and it's after 1 year that you can fertilize the tree.
All right. How much water does that tree need after you've just
planted it? So I do not like filling up my holes with water before I plant because it just makes a muddy mess. And so what I will do is get the tree in the hole, get the soil in there, and I will gently tamp the soil. You don't need to get in there like you have a steam roller to make the soil into adobe. You just want it firmed around the tree. And as I'm filling it, I will put some water in there, filling it with soil about halfway. I put a little water in there to settle the soil, and then I'll put the soil in toward the top of the tree and then water it in again, just because the water can settle the soil so you don't have air pockets around the tree. And so after you've watered it deeply the first time, wait 2 or 3 days and just check the soil. Go to the side and maybe get a hand shovel, hand trowel, and dig down. And if the soil is moist, there's no reason to water. And so this time of year, if we get rain, you only may need to water once every week to 10 days. But as we get into the 70s and 80s, you may need to water twice a week, depending on your soil, maybe even 3 times a week if you have a sand. And for the first 60 to 90 days, you need to monitor the water so that it's not muddy wet all the time and it dries out moderately, but it doesn't get bone dry. And the tree will usually, after 60 to 90 days, get roots out, and you can back off a little bit. But after the first year, you'll water those probably once a week. And it depends on your irrigation, because if you already have drip on it or something, you may just be able to rely on the drip.
All right. There's a fact sheet up on the KSL Greenhouse Facebook page. We're coming back with your calls, your questions. Phone lines are open, 801-575-8255. You can text us at 57500. Good morning. Thanks for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse. Maria and Ton with you this morning. We're going to go right directly to our phone lines this morning. We have Carl, who is in North Ogden. Good morning, Carl. What was your question? Okay, apparently have a little mix-up with the call sheet, so we're going to let them fix that for a minute. And while they do, Ton, next listener wants to know, they have a fungus in their lawn. It looks terrible. Can they treat it, or should they hire someone? And if do, when can... when can they start?
We really need more information because I don't think that it snow mold this year, just because the snow melted off so early and we didn't have snow cover for a lot of the winter.
Mm-hmm.
It could be snow mold if they're in a mountain valley and have had more extensive snow cover. But other than snow mold, there are no lawn funguses or fungi, I guess, out right now. It's just too early. You can see damage from...
But they may know from last year, maybe.
It's one of those things. It's too early, and we need more information to give a good answer.
Okay, let's go to Carl, who is in North Ogden. Good morning, Carl.
Good morning.
What was your question this morning?
I have a little creek that runs through my backyard. We love it, but it gets this black moss on it, and... get some plants growing in it. And I'd like to know what I can do to get rid of that black moss and prevent it from coming back.
Unfortunately, if this flows into the Weber River or Ogden River or something, most anything that you could do would be against the law. And it's because most of the, say you're using something approved for ponds or canals, they would be illegal to use in a natural waterway, such as a creek or a river. Because it would go
downstream, right?
Yes, it would. And so there's really, I'm trying to think of who to even talk to. Maybe the Division of Natural Resources would have some suggestions, but unfortunately, short of physically just brushing that off, I don't know of anything that would not be against the law to do.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Enjoy listening to your show.
Thanks so much, Carl, for your call this morning. Next listener is Mindy in Harriman. She's new to gardening, but she planted an Eastern redbud last year. She thinks that she's planted it too deep, And she said it did bloom and grow last year. She's wondering if it's worth trying to dig it up to fix that hole, or what would you do to fix the hole?
If it is about to break dormancy and bloom, I would not, because you could kill the tree because it would just shock it too much. And depending on how deep it is, she might be able to just excavate the soil gently away from the tree, you know, for 3 or 4 feet out in any direction to help get the trunk so that it's at the right height if it's just a few inches deep. But
other than that, it would probably hurt it.
Yeah, after 2 or 3 years in the ground, it just isn't worth digging the tree up because you're going to cause more damage.
Pray for the best.
And the best you can do is just carefully rake and loosen the soil and scrape it away to try to get down toward the root flare. You don't want to create a very, you know, a basin around the tree that collects a lot of water. But if you can make the slope gentle enough, that would be something she could do.
All right. We're going to take a break for the bottom of the hour news. Coming back with your calls and questions, you can call us 801-575-8255 or text 57500.
The Greenhouse Show on KSL News Radio.
Thank you for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse and spending the Saturday morning, your Saturday morning with us. Ton Bettis, Maria Chaleas with you. We're taking your calls at 801-575-8255. You can also text us at 57500. Ton, next listener says their mature blue Atlas cedar tree is getting yellow on the needles. And is there something that maybe it needs or that they should do?
It could be weather or drought stress from not getting enough water last fall.
Hmm.
So I would just make sure that the soil is moist around the root ball, and they oftentimes will re-needle. And so have patience and look for new bud growth in the next month or so. But right now, there's nothing they can do. I mean, they could maybe take a branch in to their local extension office and look for scale or spider mites or something. But other than that, just
not
patience is all that they can really have to try to help it.
Okay. Next listener wants to know how and when to trim a Rose of Sharon.
You use renewal pruning, and now is a great time to do it. Go in toward the middle of the bush and remove about 25% of the branches, starting with the biggest branches. And then once they do that, that will bring the height down by about a third. If they need to bring it down further, they can give it a light haircut.
Okay. John is on the line in Orem. Good morning, John. What was your question this morning?
I planted a tulip tree 4 or 5 years ago, 10 feet tall. And last year I noticed the west side of the trunk, the bark seems to be coming off, the branches have been impacted, and it looks like the west side has been kind of decimated. It's about 15 feet tall now, and I'm wondering if I should have a professional look at it, and if so, who would you suggest?
Nah, I would look up southwest winter injury. If the trunk bark is peeling off, that's likely okay. What it is, and it's from the sun. And what you're going to need to do moving forward, hopefully it's not damaged the tree too much, because there could be a root disease in there too in that section. But if it's just the bark peeling off, then I suspect it's southwest winter injury. And you would just in November, late October, November, get some of the gauze or fabric tree tape and wrap the trunk up into the lower limbs to keep the sun from heating that side of the tree up. And it comes off in March. And you do that every year until the tree starts to form that really quirky bark.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for your call this morning. Next listener, Ton, would like to know when is the best time to prune a lilac bush?
Right after they're done blooming, between late April and mid-May, depending on the year. I suspect they're going to be earlier this year. But as soon as those blooms are spent, you can go in and do your pruning, because you do that because the new flower buds for the next year are formed within a couple of weeks of the old flowers dying. And so you have about a 2-week window to get it done.
Next listener is asking about planting bare root fruit trees. They say they're going to plant them where there's grass. Does the grass need to be cleared from around the tree? What are your suggestions?
Preferably, I mean, in the ideal world, your home orchard has bare soil. Now, if it's going into the lawn, one thing they can try is maybe making rings 3 or 4 feet wide and putting the tree in the middle of those rings that you just keep clear of grass. But because most of her lawns are Kentucky bluegrass, they're going to have to go in monthly and get a spade and keep redoing that circle so that the grass doesn't creep back in to those holes. But it is possible. And then they can rely on lawn sprinklers, but every 2 or 3 weeks they might need to go in during the hottest part of the year and just run a hose in sprinkler for an extra half hour to drive water deeper into the soil.
Okay. Chris and Orem would like to know, is it too early to turn on the water and irrigate?
It is. Just leave it be. The irrigation, you probably won't need to irrigate your lawn until sometime between the first and the middle of May.
Okay. Starley is on the line in Mapleton. Good morning, Starley. What was your question this morning?
We have 4 really large trees in our backyard. 2 of them are maple. I think 2 of them are oak. And then we have this apricot tree. And we are just having problems year after year with the earwigs coming out of the bark on all the trees, especially the apricot and the maple, but just a lot of earwigs in the bark.
So there are a few things you actually can do. There are some products on Amazon and maybe from Gardens Alive. It's called Tanglefoot. And you wrap the trunk in this Tanglefoot, and it's got a real sticky substance on it that the earwigs try to crawl through and they get stuck. So you could try that. You could go out near the trees and before the fruit is ripe, get newspaper, like a section of newspaper folded over, or you can get like old whipped cream containers like grandma, you know, saves to send your Thanksgiving food home. Get those and put holes in the top of the lid about the width of a pencil or a little bit narrower, and put some oil in the bottom of the dish with some tuna. So either tuna oil or just the water from tuna to make it stinky, and put those almost like a putting where you would put into a golf cup, bury those in the ground so that the lip is just flush with the ground and see if the earwigs crawl in there. But there are several non-pesticide things you can do to try to reduce the population. I would download USU's earwig fact sheet, and just if you do an internet search of USU and earwigs, it'll bring it up.
Oh, that is perfect. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you so much for your call this morning. Next listener, Tana, wants to know, how can they kill yucca cactus that's taken over their yard?
Boy, you dig those, and every root piece you leave behind forms a new plant.
Oh, my.
And so they're going to have to probably, because the leaves are so waxy and avoid, because they're drought-hardy plants, it's hard to get an herbicide through. But if they clip the leaf toward the stem and then just put a dab of glyphosate on there and keep up with that, that might help.
All right. Jill is on the line in Sandy. Good morning, Jill. What was your question this morning?
Hi. Last spring, I had about a 70-foot silver maple tree taken out. And after I prepared the soil, later in the summer, I put down some sod. It's about a 12-by-12-inch piece of sod, or pieces that constituted that size. Now, this spring, my Kentucky bluegrass is all green and beautiful, and the sod is just brown and not growing. I forgot to ask the person who gave it to me. I got it for free. I forgot to ask them what kind of grass it was. So what should I do?
Because what time of year did you put this sod down?
It was early summer.
Early summer.
Yes.
And was it green all summer long?
It was green all summer and into fall.
It may have dried out over the winter, or it just could have died because of a lack of roots. It should have had enough time to root out.
Yeah.
And so give it longer to see if it starts to form grass blades. Try to tug on it and see if it, if it's rooted in, leave it alone. And it just may take longer to form new grass blades. But I would leave it there until June and see if it starts to reform and regrow.
Should I sprinkle some Kentucky bluegrass seed over it?
It wouldn't hurt. With the cool weather and the rain we're getting, it's a perfect time to do it. It won't germinate very quickly. And, you know, normally you do that more toward late April, but you can put it in now.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Jill, for your call this morning. Brian would like to know, when does he fertilize the lawn this spring and what should he use?
If you do not need to use a pre-emergent because your lawn is relatively weed-free, I would wait until around early May to fertilize.
But if he does need the pre-emergent?
Then get it done the next couple of weeks, because the pre-emergent products are usually mixed with fertilizer.
Okay, and then do you have something you would recommend for the fertilizer, the pre-emergent or the fertilizer, or
there's three or four kinds out there that work similarly. Barricade is one, Dimension, Pre-M. These are brands, but there's not too many differences in them, and most of them will last for around 60 days. Just follow the recommended rates on the bag.
Next listener would like to know, is fire blight, is it worth treating? Is it worthwhile? Fire blight power.
Powder, probably.
Powder. Oh, autocorrect. Is it worth using that?
It is used fire as a preventative, powder. And you need to spray it when the trees are in bloom.
Oh, I misunderstood the
yeah,
question.
And so you what it will do is help prevent further infections. It's not 100%, but if you say we're going to get half the blossoms infected with fire blight, it would reduce that down to maybe 10 or 15 or 20%. Mm-hmm. And so it's easier to prune them out and monitor. And so it's not perfect, but it's only used as a preventative. It's not curative.
All right. Well, thanks for interpreting what I was trying to ask you there. A number to call with your questions, 801-575-8255, or you can text us 57500. Thanks for being with us on this Saturday morning for the KSL Greenhouse. Maria Anton with you, taking your calls and your texts. Just a few minutes left in the show, but our phone lines are open at 801-575-8255. Let's get through as many of these text questions as we can, Ton. The next person would like to know, how do they straighten up a crab apple that has been in the ground for 2 years?
I'm sure they tried disciplining it. I'm just kidding. That was a really bad joke, but
I'm not saying a word.
Boy, I got
nope.
Dave says pathetic. No, if it's not too, if the trunk isn't too thick and wide, they can put a stake in the ground and pull the trunk back in the direction they need it to go. Leave it for a year and then take it off, and that should help.
Okay, next listener says they were pruning their peach trees and found numerous areas on the branches about a half inch long that look like the bark is burned, black, and damaged. What is it and what can be done?
Well, there are several things that cause cankers, and it could be Cytospora, which is really common. You'll get a lot of gumming this time of year with Cytospora. It could be Pseudomonas, which looks really similar. And then it also could be another disease called shot hole fungus, which gets into the branches and leaves. And the areas, you see it on the leaves because you will have the infections kind of just die and drop out. And it looks like somebody shot the leaf with a shotgun. But those little cankers can form on the branches too and eventually cause branch death. And so I texted them earlier, having them look up each of these to make sure that, to see if they can identify what it was.
Okay. Next listener would like to know, is it too late to spray cherry trees?
Depends on what they're doing. If they're doing the dormant oil and they have not bloomed, they need to get it done when there's a period of 24 hours without rain. Mm-hmm. And so if they spray and it rains on the tree, then it may not be as effective. But, you know, if it were 18 hours, that's probably okay.
All right. Dave is on the line in Cottonwood Heights. Good morning, Dave. What was your question this morning?
Hi. We have a free residence, small squirrels, and they're there every year. Just wondering, what should I be aware of? What could they damage? And should I get rid of them?
Well, they're not usually causing a lot of damage. They do eat fruit off of your tree. Sometimes they will want the pits to collect. They can be a nuisance just because they can get into your vegetable garden sometimes, do things like that. But just because they're there doesn't mean they're harming anything.
Okay.
All right. Dave, thanks for your call this
USU
morning.
USU does have some squirrel fact sheets that can be looked up. So if you do an internet search of USU and squirrels, that should bring them up.
Next listener would like to know, how soon can they use Kills All to sterilize an area when they're not going to grow anything for a year?
they're probably thinking about Noxol or Ground Clear. Kills-All is a glyphosate product that does not sterilize the ground. It only kills things that are already growing, and it doesn't have any soil activity. But if they're wanting a ground sterilant, then they could put it down at any time that would last the year, but they need to be sure that there aren't roots of desirable plants growing underneath where they're going to apply. Because any trees, any shrubs with roots under there. So if there's trees within 20 or 30 feet, if they're fully grown of where they're applying, I don't know that I would use a ground sterilant, because chances are that there's at least some roots underneath there. And so if it's free of desirable trees and things, then they could put it down at any time.
All right. Gary's on the line in Bountiful. Good morning, Gary. What was your question this morning?
What is the best mix of fertilizer for your spring fertilization?
There isn't an ideal mix. A lot of it just depends on what nutrients you already have in your soil that's available to your grass. And so a lot of times straight nitrogen is fine, but, you know, let's say you didn't do a soil test, then any mix is going to be okay. Because when you look at the percentages of the nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium, those are what the numbers stand for. Fertilizer A isn't very different than fertilizer B, which isn't very different from fertilizer C. Just because it says 1920, you know, 1905 and 24010 or whatever, they're just not a lot of difference. And so 80% of the time I tell people to put down 2000 if they're just doing it on their own.
Okay. And is now a good time? I live in Bountiful on the kind of the foothills.
If you're not doing a pre-emergent, no, it's not. If you're not doing pre-emergent, I would wait for early May.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Thanks for your call this morning. Next listener wants to know, what percent nitrogen fertilizer to put on fruit trees?
Boy, it's 16 or 2000 are both fine. It again, once you understand what the fertilizer analysis is, it becomes so much less important what you use, because you're just putting around a 15 to 20% nitrogen. But let's say you use 4600, you just cut the rate in half. So,
okay. All right. Well, the show goes so quickly, Ton. We're leaving a lot of people still hanging that had questions. People are very excited about planting. But we will be back next week for the KSL Greenhouse. Have a great weekend.